Well, I'd like to just start by saying we're glad you're listening. Less than a year ago, I met two good friends, Mary and Hal, and was just kind of overwhelmed with some of the stories Mary was telling me, and I felt moved to, at some point, to sit down and record this so other people could share it. And I hope it helps you see that you're not alone in your survivorship, and if you're a victim of child abuse, that you wouldn't feel alone, even though you're in the midst of the pain. Some of this may be triggering to certain people, so you may want to think about that before listening. I hope you receive it in a way that is done in love, and I hope it is helpful to you. That's our main reason for doing that. My name is Richard. I'm one of the directors at Day of the Child. So Mary and Hal, I'm really glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
I just wanted to go back and start at the childhood. Maybe just tell us a little bit about how it all started out for you. What was the situation?
Okay. First of all, I'm one of 11 children, and my parents are both alive. My brothers and sisters are all alive. And I can remember a little thing when I was 3 that my father made a really, really big deal out of me. And I have 2 older sisters, and I had probably 2, a younger brother and a sister. And he focused his attention on me, mm-hmm. which made my mother extremely angry. Mm-hmm. And my mother took that anger out on me. And she took it out in many, many forms. And the one form she took it out was that I loved my hair being long. I had never had a haircut. In my 5-year-old mind, this is how I felt. I'll get you back. I'm giving you a haircut. Then I told my mother I didn't like the fact that my hair was curly. My hair was naturally curly, very, very curly. And so she not only got my hair cut extremely short, but she had what was called a lamb cut done on me to make it extra curly. And so to a 5-year-old, who wants her hair to be long and straight, it hurt. And it hurt that it was coming from my mother. And to add insult mm-hmm. to injury. Now, of course, my mother didn't know this happened to me.
Okay.
She found out years later. But my mother had dropped me off at my grandmother's house. And my grandmother dropped me off at this woman's house who I had no idea who she was. Mm-hmm. But I didn't mind because I loved my grandmother and I trusted her, so I figured this woman was okay. Well, I spent the night with this woman. And so this woman during the night put my pajamas on and everything, and she molested me. And so I was molested by a woman when I was 5, and I felt extremely guilty. I felt like it was my fault. I felt I had done something to provoke that, because I knew that was a no-no place. The guilt was insurmountable, and I cried and cried and cried, but told no one, never ever telling anyone. My mother would always drill into our heads, I don't want the neighbors. She was always so afraid of other people knowing our business mm-hmm. that frightened me for anyone, even my own family, to know my business. So I didn't even share that with my best friend, my sister. And another time when I was 10 years old, I just turned 10, and everybody was sound asleep. And of course there was a bunch of kids, so I made a pound of bacon. And I knew how to cook, and I made a whole bunch of eggs. Well, I lifted the frying pan up to empty the bacon grease, and the pan broke, the handle broke in my hand, and all the grease went all over my hands and arms, and I had second and third degree burns on my hands and arms. And I didn't know what to do. Here I was, 10 years old, in the kitchen by myself. My whole family's upstairs sleeping. So all of a sudden I started screaming, and I was screaming and screaming in so much pain that my parents ran downstairs, and they were like, what's the matter, what's the matter? I had dropped the pan, and it had gone through a chair. And I said, I broke the chair. And my hands and arms were so raw. They were so red because they had been burnt so badly. And my father said, don't worry about the chair. We can get a new chair. We can't get you new hands, new arms. And I thought they were going to take me to the hospital. I thought, oh, okay, great, you know. Nobody put my hands underwater. Nobody, you know, did anything. And I was screaming and screaming so loud. And then finally my father ran upstairs and got something like unguentine and was spraying me, but that was doing nothing. And then I remember them telling me just to be quiet, if I couldn't be quiet, to just go upstairs. And so I was going upstairs and I put my face in a pillow and just kept screaming and screaming and screaming till I guess I passed out. The next day they realized how badly I had been burned, and they took me to the hospital. And the doctor was asking my mother why she hadn't brought me in the day before. And she just said she didn't think it was that bad. And he said that, you know, my fingers would be paralyzed and that it was really, really bad. That's one thing I want to mention. There's all forms of abuse. You know, there's physical abuse and there's emotional, right? And there's neglect. There's, you know, like, you don't even exist. You know, my mother, whenever we lied to her, one of her favorite methods of discipline, punishment, was we had an old gas stove, was lighting the fire and putting our hands over it and leaving them there until, just enough till they sizzle a little, you know, get a little, you know, just enough till she'd hear enough crying out of us to know that we were really being burnt. And then she'd look at your hands to make sure they were burnt. Well, this one time she did, went a little too far. Mommy went a little too far.
Oh my gosh.
It is funny sometimes, you know, in a sick sort of way.
We either cry or laugh, don't
we? Right, exactly, exactly. I know it's a laugh of sadness. My brother stole something in the house, some small little thing, and it might have been my other brother's ball or something, it didn't matter. But my mother turned on the heat, of course, as usual, the fire from the stove, and burned his hands. And I don't remember how old I was, but I was old enough to know, and it just broke, it tore me apart when I saw it. I woke up like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I went downstairs, and I saw my little brother. He was 4 at the time. And he was sound asleep, and his hands were, the ice cube trays were all emptied, and his little hands were in the sink. And he was sound asleep. He had emptied all the ice trays and was smart enough at 4 to put on the cold water. He had turned off the water, but his little hands were in that sink. Full, the sink was full, were in the sink, and he was just asleep with his hands in the water. This is 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know when my mom burned him, but it was probably like the afternoon before.
Oh my God.
So for several hours,
yeah.
But he waited to do that because he couldn't get caught doing that.
Why not?
You better not get caught healing your wounds or having somebody else heal your wounds. My mother was against that too. But you know, my mother introduced me to the Catholic religion early, early in life. I didn't really understand until I went to private Catholic school, and I was petrified of God. I was scared to death. I was waiting for the bolt of lightning. I knew I deserved it. But I would go to church when people weren't there. I would go to church after school by myself, and somehow in that church, God gave me love. God made me feel love. I would look on the cross and I would really feel Jesus in my heart. I could feel him in my heart. I could feel his love surrounding me. But that was the only time. My father drank heavily. My father drank every night of the week. My father would never, ever let us sleep. If he came in at 2 o'clock in the morning, if he came in at 5 o'clock in the morning, if he went on a binge for 3 days, whenever he came home, we had school the next day, it didn't matter. He woke us up. He brought home strays, what I call strays, stray animals, strays, wow. Stray people. Our house was always packed, and it was a little tiny, tiny house. There was a bathroom, there was no shower, but people just gravitated. But he brought a lot of bums, prostitutes, a lot of what people would call low life people into our home. And he would make me make them drinks. He would make me, because I was his beautiful child, he would make me sing and dance for them. I knew how to sing. I knew how to dance. So
I
was.
How old at this point?
I was 5.
Wow.
I can remember mixing. I could mix any kind of drink by the time I was about 7. I had seen more than a child should see.
Yeah.
My dad worked, but went to the bar, straight to the bar, every night that he worked. And then every weekend he was at the bar the whole weekend. Right. Oh, and he always took us to the bar. I was his favorite person to take, and he took me there lots of times. I thought it was great. I get peanuts and soda, and people give me quarters. Of course, I had to deal with the drunks, but that I didn't like. My father was the drunk, happy drunk, uh-huh, most of the time, except when he was throwing knives or taking hatchets to the side of the door. Yeah, my dad took a hatchet to the door with 8 children and my mother behind the bedroom door. We were shielding our mother, and our mother was letting us shield her. And God, at that very moment, had one of his best friends in the whole world open the door of our house, open the front door, our house was always open, and call up, "Hey, Jack," and he realized what was happening, and he made it real light, mm-hmm, and he said, "Why don't we go out for a drink?" And my dad said, "Oh, hey, that sounds good."
Just in time.
Yeah, but my mother left the hatchet marks, I mean, because he had broken through the door with a hatchet.
Did you all feel like you had a responsibility to protect your mother?
Oh, absolutely,
him?
Always. Anytime there was any kind of a fight.
So you're playing adult roles at 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh, nine, yes. And then I was again molested a few years later by my father's best friend. Mm. Only he did it for years. He did it for about 4 or 5 years. And I found out in my late 20s that he had done it to my sisters. And now I'm older now, see. Now I'm 7, 8. So now I'm really, and I'm already in second grade. I'm a mature woman. I've taken care of, you know, I've got 8 younger brothers and sisters. I have bathed, diapered, fed, all
7?
That. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My parents did a lot of wonderful things. I don't want the listeners to misunderstand that either. They did a lot of wonderful things for us. Like every year, we all saved. So we went on vacation every year, or we joined this lake for the summer, and we'd go every weekend. Well, this one particular Sunday we went, and around 11 o'clock, me and my older sister were swimming, and we were jumping off this 10-foot dive and having a ball. She said, "Come on, Mary, make this your last jump." I said, "Okay, this will be my last jump, but I want to jump one more time." And so I went up 10 feet and jumped off. And like I said, it was a man-made lake. So there were steps going into the water. Well, I jumped right on the step. My left foot went right on the step and broke every bone in my ankle. which was extremely painful. And I said, I can't swim. And she said, sure you can. And I started to swim and I started to drown, and a man saved me and took me back to the picnic table. The other people around, not my family, but other people that were around said, oh my gosh, it's so swollen. You better take her to the hospital right away and everything. And they said, oh, we'll pack it in ice and we'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. And my mother was yelling at me the whole time. And, you know, you stupid girl, you stupid girl. You messed up everything for everybody. And so they packed it nice, and I was waiting to go to the hospital. And I said, Mom, when are you going to take me, you know, when are you and Dad going to take me to the hospital? And, of course, my dad was already drunk. And she said, we'll take you to the hospital when everybody's done having their fun. They took me to the hospital at 6 o'clock that night. The lake was over an hour away from where we lived. They dropped me off at the hospital. They put me in a room. The hospital staff put me in a room, a side room, in a wheelchair with my left leg up. They forgot about me. The hospital had forgotten about me.
How old were you at this time?
I was 13. A doctor found me around midnight, 12:30. And I was in there and I was trying not to make a sound, but I was crying. And he said, what happened to you? And I had told him, you know, that we came in at 6. And he said, 6 o'clock? And he started screaming at the nurses, which I loved, because I thought, you know, finally, I'm getting some justice here, you know what I mean? You know, all this neglect and abuse, and finally somebody's going to have to pay, and they're going to have to pay big time. And so I ended up having to stay in that hospital for 4 days. And my parents and my brothers and sisters never came to visit me. So I was quite an alone child. And then they came to pick me up, thank God. And thank you, Lord. And I still had a cast on, and I had to keep a cast on for like 12 weeks. I was operated on. That's why I was in the hospital for 4 days, because I had been operated on, and my parents weren't even there for the operation or the after effects. So it was a very, very upsetting, extremely upsetting.
What were you feeling at that time as far as them, why they didn't come to see you?
I just felt so very, very, very alone. The biggest thing I can stress to you, I believe this, is that you feel like you have absolutely no value in the world whatsoever. You're not valued by anyone, even yourself. You have no worth. You have no esteem. No one cares. If you dropped off the face of the earth, so what? Nobody would miss me. And the other time I can remember, now this is the end of my childhood, 17. By this time I had a boyfriend. I never really had a boyfriend. Just guys that I'd meet somewhere, because again, I was unworthy. I was unworthy of being taken out to the movies. They never ever took me out to the movies or skating or any fun things. The downside is that because you feel so unworthy, you lessen yourself. And people see that. People pick it up wherever you go. Now, I'm glad I didn't lessen myself sexually. I could have done that. I could have gone that way. I could have, you know, been promiscuous. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But I lessened myself in ways that I didn't let boys be gentlemen to me in the way that they should come to my door and knock on my door and meet my parents. Yeah. I just meet them at a Burger King. And that does make, it makes you feel like you're nothing, you know? I was picky in the looks department. But I wasn't picky in a lot of other ways that I should have been picky. I was a good-looking teenager, and so they wanted me for one thing. Of course, I got dumped. I'd see a guy once, and then maybe once in a while he'd try twice, and then he'd get the message, it's not happening.
From what you've learned and the pain you've been through, give the young people up today that are listening some advice.
I would say be selective. Even if you don't feel worthy, even if you don't feel valuable, put a piece of paper on your mirror. I'm sure you look in it, and put I am a worthwhile person, and look at it every day. Reinforce yourself. Say it to yourself. All by yourself. You don't need to be, say it in front of anybody else. Say, I am worthwhile. I'm a child of God. God loves me. If He loves me, I must be selective. Don't force yourself. Don't make yourself do things that you don't want to do. Nothing. There isn't anyone in the world who would force you to do something who is good for you. Not at all. And if they really care about you, they're willing to wait. If they're not, then move on,
That's a good signal, isn't it?
Yes, then move on.
We kind of run towards the first half good thing that comes along instead of waiting for something that's great because we don't feel worth a whole lot ourselves.
Which brings me to my next story,
Okay.
which is this is really great that you would say that. I was 17 years old, and I had a boyfriend, and he had been my boyfriend for about a half year or so, and he was a really, really nice guy. He was a gentleman. He actually took me out. So maybe I was changing a little inside, I don't know. But anyway, he was terrific. He was my first love. And I just happened to get this really neat guy for almost 3 years. Matter of fact, we had our blood test to get married. He was from the other side of the tracks. He was very rich. I wasn't rich. I didn't even get to meet his parents. They didn't even want to meet me because they knew where I lived. And so one day he just didn't show up when we were supposed to go get married. He just didn't show up. And I didn't see him for 4 months. God gave me a wonderful glimpse of what love could be. But then I had to go through some more stuff before I got to my lifelong wonderful partner. Hal has gotten me, I said during one of the breaks, you have gotten me through so much. You've heard these stories so much. Are you bored? And he said, no, he is so patient and kind and loving and good and wonderful. And no matter how many times you have to say it, if you have to, if you have to go to a friend, a true friend, that you can talk to, talk and talk and talk so you can get it out, so you can get the tears out, so you can get the anger and the frustration and the hurt and the pain, to be able to start that forgiveness process. But I met a guy when I was 16 years old and I thought he was the one I was going to marry. And he dumped me when I was 18. I mean, cold flat dumped me. We had our blood test to get married and everything. And it was like he was off the face of the earth. I called and I couldn't find him anywhere. And that was a great devastation. It proved again that I was unworthy. And so what did I do? That was in September. In November, November 5th, I met a man. I married him less than 3 months later. We eloped. And the reason I married him, I know now, is I felt so hurt and so unlovable and so unworthy and so devalued as a human being and as a woman mm-hmm. and as a partner with this man who is so incredibly wonderful who dumps me mm-hmm. that I thought that I was so unlovable that no one would ever in my entire life love me, so that I better grab somebody. We married on February 1st. On Valentine's Day, I made him some presents, and my old boyfriend had called the house to wish me congratulations. My husband's mother called her son and told him that I was going off to have a rendezvous with my ex-boyfriend, which was not at all the case. Mm-hmm. I was married for 13 days. So my husband came home and he proceeded to run down the steps and said, "What did you do today?" And I said, "Nothing much. You know, I did the laundry. I did that." "No, what did you do? What did you do?" And I didn't really know what he was talking about. And then it clicked. And I said, "Oh, I heard from my old boyfriend." And he said, "You not only heard from him." And then he proceeded to beat me. And I mean, he punched me in the face so hard. And this was the first time in my life that anyone had ever punched me in the face. Mm-hmm. And he was punching me in the face and punching me in the face and punching me in the face. And there was just blood everywhere. And so I just started packing my bags and running. But I didn't know where I was going to go because I was too ashamed. I wouldn't have gone back to my parents' house. So I didn't know what I was going to do, but anyway, he cried and apologized, and I said, "Well, you know, you just can't hit me. You can't do this to me." Well, he could, and he did, and it was silent for hours in that room afterwards, and I'm telling you, he beat me so badly, his whole family was upstairs. And not once did any of them come down until about 2 hours later. And I think they came down to see if I was alive. And what proceeded from there was 8.5 years of terror. Being pushed down a flight of steps when I was 5 months pregnant with my son.
Let me interject. What would make you stay with a violent man like that? Because I think that's something people need to hear.
Okay. One thing that's extremely important for everyone to know is that no woman in the world that I have ever met or I believe will ever meet wants to be hit or beaten. That's just absurd. That's yeah. nuts. The reasoning is that lack of self-worth. You'll never ever find anyone. The fear of the unknown. Okay, where do I go from here? I can't go back as a failure to my parents. I have a child on the way, his child. So I thought the best way would be counseling, get help. And so I approached him with that many, many times during the marriage, and he always said, "Well, you're the sick one. You need help. You go to counseling." And so I would go to counselors and I'd say, "He told me I'm the sick one. I need help. So I'm here for help." And they said, "Bring him in."
Yeah.
He never, ever went to counseling with me.
I want to say something. Her mom said, "Well, you know, he beat you. Behave so he doesn't beat you."
Oh, yes. Thank you for interjecting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said, "Stop doing whatever it is that you're doing, that you're making him beat you. That you're making him beat you." I did so everything I could do. I didn't talk. I talked. Mm-hmm. I cowered. Most of the time, I cowered. When he beat me, I cowered. I only fought back once. Now, he had never beaten me in front of anybody else, see? This was a big secret for years until He beat me in front of an administrative head of an aerospace company overseas. In his home, he cold-cocked me and put my nose across the side of my eye to where I had to have reconstructive surgery to put my nose back together again. And I hid in the bathroom. I locked the bathroom of these other people's house that we didn't know that well. And like a 2-year-old child, for about 20 minutes, just sat in the corner and rocked myself that whole time.
When did you wake up one day and go, this got to change, things, I got to get help, I got to get healed, I can be healed?
You know, it is a sickness to stay in a situation like that. You know, you do have choices. And he could have gotten help. He was unwilling. I could have gotten help. I was willing. Finally, I did leave him. I thank God for that. God never left my side and did give me lots of insight many times. In my house were a bunch of drug addicts and drunks, like what I'd come from, laying on my floor. One couple was fighting. She had a knife in her hand, was going after him. And this all seemed like I was looking at television or something. Like it wasn't really my life. I guess I've had enough is enough is enough, and I don't want any more of this, and I can't take violence anymore. I just can't take abuse and violence and everything, that every ugly thing that goes with it. I just can't take it. I can't take raising voices. I can't take any of it. None of it. And so I walked into the kitchen, and there was my husband with his friends. And he had his usual, people laugh when I've told him this, his usual beer with his Cheerios. And I said, I need to speak to you in the bedroom. So he went in the bedroom with me. And he said, what do you want? I said to him, you must choose. You must get these people out of this house. And we need to sit and we need to talk, because we have a real problem. And he said, I can't ask them to leave. And I said, okay, give me your answer. Well, every time I left him, I always took my son. Always. He never wanted him. He didn't want the responsibility. But somehow he knew it was the end too. So he grabbed my son and he threatened. Well, I couldn't take him. And I said, come on. I've taken him every time. And he said, well, not this time. And I said, well, I'm still leaving you. And he said, I'll kill your son first so you can watch. Then I'll kill you. And I said, and this was truly on trust and faith in God, I said, I'm leaving you. And I left my son. Now, some people would say, oh, my God, what a horrible mother. But I loved him that much. I wasn't going to risk his life by taking him and play this kidnap. I just wouldn't do that. And what ensued after that was a 2.5-year custody battle, which my son unfortunately got thrown into. I mean, I got to see him maybe 4 hours every 3 or 4 months. He used him. Like dangled him in front of me because he knew that was the only thing left in the world was my son that I loved. And I said, you know what? That button isn't even going to work.
So you've been through a life of pretty severe abuse. Good. Physical, emotional, sexual. Really, you've had all three to deal with at different times of your life.
Yes, I have. And I just trusted God that it was going to be okay and that somehow my son and I would get through it.
So there is healing out there.
There's healing. And I'm living proof. it is a process to heal, but I don't want people to think, oh my God, I'm going to go through 25 years of healing, and I'm going to be in agony and pain, I'm going to be miserable, and I'm not going to be happy, I'm not going to have a smile on my face, I'm not going to have joy. It is a process. That doesn't mean you're not maturing during that period. And God just keeps helping you to get stronger and stronger and stronger until you get to the point where, wow, these things that I thought were so huge, that I thought were unforgivable, they are forgivable. I can forgive. Forgiveness is the key.
How has the forgiveness process changed your life?
Like night and day. First of all, I started praying for the people I resented.
How do you forgive somebody that put your hands into a flame?
You know, it really isn't. With the power of prayer is so strong and so great that I'm smiling, right? It isn't really that difficult. I'm telling you, just give it 2 weeks. You pray for somebody you can't stand. And if you have God in your life, you will feel at least a sense of you will feel better. There are some people I've had to pray for, you know, but not for a long time. And then all of a sudden a peace comes over you. And it's like, I know I've done wrong. I've hurt other people. Maybe not to that extent. It doesn't matter. A forgiveness comes over you that it's like, that happened. Okay, it's over, you know. I can't change that. You know, I can go on. I can hate you. I can despise you. I can, you know, curse you under my breath. I can write you nasty letters. Mm-hmm. I can be cruel to you. Or I can love you. And Hal has seen me and heard me go through this process with my own mother and also with my ex-husband.
Well, one thing about prayer and forgiveness. 13 years ago, I went to prison for drunk driving. I'd been divorced for a few years, but my ex just gave me constant trouble about seeing my son, to the point of where I finally just let go for his sake, because I thought it was putting him through the kind of stuff I went through when I was a kid, watching my parents fight constantly. My kid doesn't need this. I could remember my dad drinking, hit my mom, this kind of stuff. I thought, you know, he could probably do without this. But anyway, when I was in prison, this priest came and I was talking to him about how angry I was with my ex-wife, and he said, well, you're going to have to pray for her. I looked right at him seriously and I said, I'll pray for her to drop dead. And he goes, no, that's not really what I had in mind. But I was so bitter with it. And, you know, being angry with somebody is like you taking poison and expecting it to get to them. It's not happening. I was stressed, of course, from being in prison, and I thought about it probably for a week, and I saw him at an AA meeting again. He said, how's that praying coming? And I told him, well, I haven't started. And he said, so, you feeling better? Praying for her to die? I said, well, I just haven't been praying. I, you know, trying to keep her out of my mind. And he said, oh, that'll work. So I finally started praying for her, and you know, it really did change the way. It took me 2 months, but finally it just happened in one day. It changed from me praying not to hate her to praying for her well-being and for her to be a good mom. It was just such a load off of me. Not to mention that I could honestly pray for her, and I did believe in God's power, so I believed that would have some effect. It would help her and him. I don't think people really understand the power of prayer and meditation. If you haven't prayed your way through some kind of adversity, I don't really think you can understand what it can do for you.
Go directly to God, even if you hate that word. Right now, as I'm saying it, go in your bathroom, go in your office, in the living room. Ask Him to help you. Ask Him to show you the person to trust. Even if you don't believe in God, trust me, I promise you, He will reveal to you. Some people call faking it till you make it. I don't think it's faking it. I think it's just being uncertain and being scared. You don't know where to go? Go to the source. Go to God, and He will direct you. He'll direct you. Just trust that. Know that He will. I promise you He will. Things came together for me right after I left my husband. I turned on the television set and I saw a man asking if you wanted to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Do so now by this little prayer. Well, I believed in Jesus. I knew Jesus. I thought I did. I was raised that. I knew He died on the cross for me. But I didn't really, really feel that in my heart. And so I prayed the prayer. And right after I prayed the prayer, this flood of tears came from me, and I was in my living room by myself, and I just completely broke down. I thought I would, I cried until I thought I couldn't stop, and I cried for forgiveness. I cried for forgiveness for myself first. I felt like such a bad person. I thanked God for loving me through everything, and I asked for forgiveness for the people I had hurt and for the people who had hurt me. And I just kept crying and crying and crying. And it was the first real giant step for me, that personal relationship, that I could tell Jesus my deepest, darkest secrets. And in all I'd done, that He still loved me, and that I was worthwhile. Through all adversity, I have peace. I have total peace. And it was only because of my relationship with the Lord.
You're a special couple.
Thank you.
And thank you that you were able to talk about this and share it with others. And Day of the Child is just a day to bring attention to this as an awareness of child abuse. And I think by having real life situations to talk about, that we're able to demonstrate that there's hope, there is healing from these tragic lives that many of us get caught in. Thank you, Hal. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.